Oh, it's time for some internet. It's time for some internet.
Yep.
Hello, squirrels.
Squeak, 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 squeak.
Squirrel squeak?
I don't know. What do they do? Chatter?
I think they do chatter. They definitely chatter. And all of that. But I'm sure they would squeak. I'm sure, like, if you, like, tried to choke the life out of one.
It's the sound they make when they're hit by a car.
Squeak. Oh, man.
We call that squirrel grease.
Oh, God. We have so many of those. Especially in the spring when all the dumb young squirrels come out and they're all running around.
That's called Darwin.
I guess so.
Yep.
Soon we're going to involve like a breed of squirrels that are, like, know about cars.
No.
Well, we do, because there's lots of them that do. I mean, I drive down the road all the time. I see them see me coming and they take off. Because they're not the young dumb ones that got hit by the car. They might have watched one of their brothers or sisters eat it.
Yeah, probably. Anyway, Alan.
Yes.
Tell us your big news, Alan.
I have a furry. He's actually stalking me from across the room right now. I have a furry audience member here.
Aw.
Well, now he's looking at the clock. Anyway, yes, I have a cat.
And the cat has you.
Yes, the cat has me.
And what's the cat's name?
The cat's name is Cosmo.
And what did you just tell me about this cat's name?
Oh, I said I'm going to tell everyone it's short for Cosmoline.
It's a brown cat. This is acceptable.
It's a brown, kind of brownish tabby. I don't know. It works.
Yep. Now he is shy a limb, you say.
Yes, he is.
Which limb?
The right rear.
Right rear?
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be a bitch in corners.
Yeah, he wipes out a lot.
Oh.
Cornering is not so great, and the jumping. About half the time he tries to jump up on something, his back foot slides out from under him.
Oh.
He only had his amputation at the end of March, so he's still... You know, he's still trying to get used to.
He's learning how to fly this thing.
Right.
I'm sure he'll figure it out.
He crashes every now and then. But he hops right back up. And
he's super cute.
He is.
By the way.
Yeah, you even post pictures. I want pictures.
It's on Facebook.
Oh.
I guess I'll never see your cat.
I'll put it this way. He's quicker on three legs than I am on two. So he's not, he's not hurting.
Yeah, he's super cute. And what inspired you to get the cat?
He needed a home.
Aw. I was wondering about this, because Cosmo is the second cat now that I know of, like, among the internet gun blogger kind of sphere. Second cat that is short a leg. That someone has adopted.
Yes.
And I was wondering, are people more likely to adopt a three-legged cat or less likely?
I don't know.
It depends on whole... Brita.
Well, yeah. I got to be honest. I don't know that didn't have something to do with it.
Okay.
The fact that I know Brita, who is, an amputee and, is pretty fucking awesome. So...
You can get the cat a special leg.
I can jump up on the couch.
There's no reason that, especially a quadruped, they can lose a limb and be fully functional. So it's not that big a deal.
Right.
But a lot of people,
on the other hand,
but here's the thing, you know how it is in animal shelters, there's a reason they charge more for a kitten than they do an adult cat because, you might have heard him. He was just chirping at me.
I did hear him.
They charge more for a kitten than an adult cat because more people want kittens. I don't know why, because there's not really that much advantage to having a kitten. If you get a kitten, you don't know what its personality is going to be like when it grows up. It's kind of a crapshoot. I mean,
that was kind of like a friend of mine growing up had a cat, and this cat was named Frisky. And I believe that name had to have been donned upon Frisky when Frisky was a kitten. Yeah. Needs to say, nobody ever called this cat Frisky. This cat's name is Meatloaf.
Well, yeah, see, there you go.
Because this cat was fat and lethargic. Yeah. There weren't a whole lot of Frisk and Frisky.
So anyway, my thinking, and you know, I haven't done a study and I don't know anything about, you know, the animal adoption world, but I know that adult cats get adopted less often, and I have to assume that adult cats missing limbs have to be even less likely to be adopted.
It's really popular these days to get one from China.
So anyway.
Well, congratulations on your addition to your family.
Yep. He's pretty awesome. I like we hit it off right from the beginning. Yeah. I mean,
what I've seen, he's a good cat. Yeah. I mean, a lot of cats that you adopt from the shelter or from anywhere really take days to warm up to you.
Oh no.
You know. And Cosmo seems to really have, you know, liked you from the get-go. So.
Yep.
Which is pretty crazy because Al's not a particularly likable guy.
I know. I don't understand it either.
All right. Well, let's play some music and get on with the show.
Okay.
Hey, looky there. It's Thursday, May 15th, 2014. This is episode 104? Yeah, 104. Wow. 104.
Squirrels.
Hmm.
I did want to say, I think last time I checked, we sold 53 shirts now.
I know. That's pretty cool.
Awesome. I'm getting me a Bentley. Continental GT, kids.
I think Alan gets a Bentley first.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, I think so.
He's just going to get drunk and wreck it.
Let me see if I can add our special guest.
I want to talk about what I did on Mother's Day.
Who?
While we're trying to get Kevin in.
What you did on Mother's Day?
Yeah. Baby Thunderdome.
Oh, yeah. Baby Thunderdome.
Wait,
best
what?
Idea ever.
Yeah, we did the Baby Thunderdome. I'm trying to call Kevin.
So Vector and I had been joking about, because he's got a daughter that's very, very similar in age to mine. And so they're kind of growing up together. And I...
There he is.
Hello?
I think so.
Yep.
So I'm here?
Yeah, you're here. This is Kevin Baker. And hang on a second. Weird's telling us the Baby Thunderdome story.
Yeah. I caught part of that.
Okay.
So, yeah. So... I was always joking about, well, first just making general jokes about baby Thunderdomes because, you know, babies fighting to the death, hilarious. And, but also just the, when we'd set them together and just kind of let them poke at each other, I kind of called that Baby Thunderdome. And he went, of course, like all engineers do, you know, I've got a geodesic dome in my basement. So, so for Mother's Day, our respective wives got an appointment to a local nail place to get their nails all prettified. And get away from us. And we got in charge of the kids. And so we set up that geodesic dome and hung a whole bunch of toys and stuff off of it. And we had ourselves some Baby Thunderdome. It was the best.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Two babies in her and ever. Just sat there.
Yeah. Yeah. If you look at the picture, I'll throw it up again just in case somebody missed it.
Looks like there's a little horse eating going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think those are actually made from real horses, too.
Yeah.
They come from India.
It might be.
But you can see my daughter, who's in the center of the shot. She thinks that she's died and gone to heaven.
Of course.
Baby Thunderdome is the greatest thing ever. Yeah, those two chubby arms were flapping up and down like she was trying to take off.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh. Well, then.
Happy Mother's Day.
Yep.
Weird.
Two babies in.
All right.
One baby leaves.
I'm fairly certain none of us here are mothers of anything other than four-leggeds.
Well, whatever.
I'm a stay-at-home mom!
Yeah, you kind of are.
And the lovely beard you have, too.
Does that make weird the bearded lady?
I guess.
I'm the prettiest princess at the ball.
So anyway, we have Kevin Baker, ladies and gentlemen. Yay!
Baker.
And there was much rejoicing.
Yeah. Hey, Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm good. Yourself?
I'm good. It was my idea to have you on.
It was.
Well, thank you.
And it was a darn good idea.
Thanks.
It's been a while.
Well, I think Kevin is great generally, and I think he has stuff to talk about now. I mean, you know, not that you didn't before, but...
I was going to say, if I had stuff to talk about, I'd still be blogging.
Yeah. No, but, like, you know, this is kind of a moment in blog history.
What, me quitting?
Yes!
Let's not call it retiring.
Brita enjoys it when people, because she's like the trendsetter. She was blogs are dead.
Are you calling Brita a hipster?
No, I said she's a trendsetter.
Is she quitting blogging while drinking Pabst Blue Ribbon and playing Atari 2600?
Maybe.
And we're having a beard.
I don't know. Anyway, Kevin, you started blogging a long time ago.
11 years,
and that's forever in internet time.
Yeah, I know. I've watched a lot of people go in that period.
And I just want to ask you, right? Do you get to the point after 11 years of blogging when you think about something to blog about, it's like, oh, fuck, I did that back in, 2007? Or,
funny you should mention that, Alan. Over the last few weeks at work, I've had a lot of windshield time. So I've downloaded a lot of podcasts and listened to them. Some of them previous editions of this podcast, and also Vicious Circle.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
And I was actually on a few of those.
Yes, you are.
And
I don't really hate you, Kevin, but we squared that when we met down in Houston.
I was on Vicious Circle 78 back in November of 2010.
Oh, good Lord.
I think.
Oh, my God.
And that was 7 years into blogging, and I think I said then that I had gotten to the point where I would just say, I've said something about this before, here's the post, go read it.
It's no good when you start quoting yourself, really.
Yeah, well, I've done that a lot in the last year or two.
Yeah, time to hang it up. You know, it's like point people to the archives and say, okay, I'm done.
Pretty much.
That was one of my big things with blogging was nobody ever read the archives. It was like, you know, this whole they need a new thing every day, you know. And I was kind of the mind that you have to post something every day so you have readership every day.
You do, yeah. I mean, if you want to attract a regular readership, you've got to post something every day.
Right, yeah. But that kind of negates the idea that there is such a wealth of not only information but good writing in your archives, right? And nobody reads it.
Well, nobody read it when I first wrote it, so it really isn't that big a deal.
You know, Kevin, I wanted to ask you, 11 years ago in internet time is like forever ago.
Yes.
77 in dog years.
What was blogging like back then?
Well, it was a lot more frustrating because Blogger had a tendency to eat posts a great deal.
Eek. Yeah.
That got old.
Yeah.
Fast.
Especially if you're doing Uber posts like you.
Yes. Very much so.
Would you back them up or?
I learned to. I actually started. I got to the point where I was writing them in WordPad, and then I'd just transfer them over as a block, and then I'd edit them.
Blogger's
gotten to be an awful lot better in the last 11 years. Much more reliable.
Grandpa, tell me what blogging was like when you were young.
There were an awful lot fewer blogs. One thing that's really changed is there are an awful lot more gun bloggers now than there used to be.
I was going to ask something about that because I don't know. My impression is that the blogging thing went through a sort of cycle where you had the people that were like blogging before blogging was kind of a thing, like Jerry Pournelle, who you know, had his web blog, like before there was such a thing as a blogging platform.
Yes.
And then you had, you know, the proto bloggers. And then you had people that were kind of building their own blogging platforms. And then you had, you know, the beginnings of the, you know, it really took off when like Blogger started and they were like, you know, they had these where you didn't actually have to be a programmer to have a blog.
Yes, that's how I got into it, because I didn't have to be a programmer. I didn't have to. I mean, it took me a while to learn HTML for
right.
italics and bold and changing colors and all the rest of that stuff that everybody else could do because they were programmers.
Right. And you had to know how to do that.
Yeah, you did.
And then
how do you create a list? How do you indent? How do you do quotations? Right. How do you do it so it's legible, readable?
It didn't do that for you.
It didn't do that for you. And it does now. I mean, yeah. Now you've got what you see is what you get editing, right. which is very, very handy.
And then you had – that was like the golden age of blogging, I think.
I don't think I could do a link for about the first 3 or 4 months I blogged. I didn't know how to do a link.
And then you have the golden age of blogging. You've got – and it really took off post 9/11. I think you had the mill bloggers, and you had that's when Instapundit came out and got big, and that's a lot of the early biggies, I guess. And then
that predates me because I started in 03.
Right.
What was that statement of the guys in their pajamas? When did that pejorative first show up? That's kind of a pivotal point in blogging as well.
That was after I got started. That was some nimnuts in their mainstream media talking about bloggers as being people in their pajamas in their mother's basement writing. Dismiss them. They're not professionals like we are.
Yeah, I think that's actually fairly recent.
It's not recent, but it was probably around 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
Maybe 2003.
It was, no, I think it was later than that. I'm thinking, well, we could probably do a Google search and find out, but I'm thinking it was like mid-aughts.
Yeah. It was definitely before Little Green Footballs went crazy.
Yeah. Boy, that's somebody should write a book about that episode. That was weird. The Little Green Footballs implosion.
Yeah. Did he like overdose on something or what?
I don't know, but he was a major player in the Rathergate thing.
Yes, yeah. He was. I mean, he was realistically he was the guy that did the side-by-side GIF comparisons
right.
of the two images.
Yes, he did. And he was the one that showed that the font used was a laser printer font and not a typewriter font.
It was Word. It was Word with nothing changed from the default settings.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then after that,
actually, no, he was not the one who did that. There's a guy who on I can't remember which forum it was who did it, and he was the one who took basically an image of they put it up as a PDF file, I think, on the CBS website.
Right.
And this other guy posted his image of the non-formatted. I think Little Green Footballs. What the hell was his name?
Johnson.
Johnson actually typed it out as instructed. Don't change anything. Just type it out.
Right.
And print it. And he did that. And then he took the two images, the one off the CBS website and his scanned image, and just flipped them back and forth in an overlay.
Yeah.
And said, look, they're exactly the same.
Yeah. Charles Johnson.
That's Charles it. Johnson.
And,
yeah.
And then after that, he just went like completely crazy.
Wasn't he with some other big name people and they split off, or what was the?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there was a whole lot of drama in that.
Yep.
And that was, I was still very, very new to my awareness of blogs. So I wasn't really following the players back then.
We have a caller.
Oh, good.
Hello. Area code 703.
Hi, can I talk to Kevin, please?
Yes.
Which one do you want?
Kevin,
to
I bacon? I loved you in Footloose.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, man. That, yeah, this is Jay.
That never gets old, does it?
It never does. Hi, Brita. I had to be the first one to get that in. I actually called in starting last night. True story.
I think we should play 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon with Kevin Baker.
6 degrees of Kevin Baker? Well, we all know him, so get... it's like one.
No. Like, how far is Kevin Baker from Kevin Bacon?
Oh, I know the answer to that. Three.
Three?
Yep.
Okay.
Alan's got it.
Why is that?
I want to hear this.
My roommate was an opening act for the Bacon Brothers when they were performing in Maine for one of their CD release tours, and after the show he got to hang out with Kevin Bacon and whatever the hell his brother the other one, so my old roommate and the best man at my wedding was an opening act for Kevin Bacon, I think Kevin Bacon is he 1 degree or zero? He's 0 degrees from Kevin Bacon. My roommate is 1 degree from Kevin Bacon, so therefore I am 2 degrees from Kevin Bacon. And since Kevin and all y'all are my buddies, you are all three.
Yep. Wow.
If you have ever been touched by my noodly appendage, you are 3 degrees from Kevin Bacon.
So basically, I spent 14
no
hours
weird,
in the car
but I
with Kevin
touch
Bacon.
With somebody else's noobly appendage.
Oh man.
Oh, well, Kevin, I saw your post, and I think you'll be drawn back in. I totally understand the I'm done. I found myself doing the same thing. I'll put up a post and realize I've told the same anecdote before, and it's like, oh boy, I'm on reruns.
Yeah, I really, honest to God, was going to sit down and crank out this 20,000-word Uber post for the 11th anniversary, and just basically saying, you know, here's everything I've said over the last 11 years. It's been fun, but I'm finished.
Yeah.
And I started working on it. I started collecting stuff that I wanted to include into it. I have a tab with about 25 or 30 links in it right now.
Jeez.
And I
you
started
can link
writing.
Now?
Do what?
You can link now? Shit.
Yeah. And I started writing the thing probably 4 weeks ago. And as I got closer and closer and closer to the anniversary date, basically, I just dragged out the bottle of Fuck It All and took a couple, you know.
the total number of shits given was zero.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I said, you know, I'm done. I've said it. I'm not going to say it again. I'm done.
I saw that 11 years. I was like, holy shit, 11 years. And I'm like, come July, it'll be 11 years for me.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. You started on Toys. Was it Toys in the Attic?
Toys in the Attic.
Yeah,
yep.
I remember that.
July of 2003. It was right after my daughter was born.
I haven't had a chance to say this to you before, Jay, but welcome to American Occupied America.
Aha. Yes. Yes, at least for now, despite Terry McAuliffe's best intonations.
Yeah.
Hey, Jay, at least no matter how bad things get in Virginia, it's like, I mean, I was always joking. Sean's in the chat. I was always joking with Sean about the fact that, you know, my wife and I were considering moving to North Carolina because it's a good place for the type of work we're in. And I went, oh, God, I mean, the gun laws are better than Massachusetts, but they're not that much better than Massachusetts. But, of course, since then, North Carolina's actually gotten pretty awesome because they're going in the right direction.
They've gone from the Massachusetts of the South to more like the, you know, Maine of the South.
Well, when I lived there, you had to get permission from the sheriff to buy a pistol.
Yeah, that was not all that long ago. They got rid of that.
Yeah, no, all the good changes really happened in the last like 3 or 4 years.
I mean, I moved to Arizona. Yeah, in 81, and then they got concealed carry, and then they got constitutional carry, which just shocked the hell out of me.
Yeah, I didn't expect that either.
Yeah, Wyoming was not hard to call. You know, 'cause Wyoming's like one step away from just handing you an Uzi at the border. Here you go. Welcome to Wyoming. Here's an Uzi.
Yeah, weird is why New Hampshire
I'm sorry, it wouldn't be an
Uzi,
it'd be an AR.
You would think New Hampshire would have them all beat.
I blame Massachusetts.
Yeah, yeah. I think New Hampshire gets overlooked because it's so close to Mass. It's just the suck washes over. And you just expect that all of New England is just horrible. But, like, New Hampshire and Vermont are like, fuck you. You can have anything you want except suppressors in Vermont.
Yep. Maine's pretty darn good, too, though. I mean, it is a little bit weird. Yeah. But again, I mean, Maine's what turned, you know, Maine's gun laws versus Massachusetts gun laws what turned me into a rabid, you know, gun rights activist and a blogger was just because I grew up in Maine where Northern New England just does not give a shit about guns.
Well, because you're in, you know, danger of being eaten by a bear, so you kind of need
exactly. People hunt and it's no big deal. You know, you know. I know many a person who's filled out a deer tag in their pajamas and slippers because they got
the back porch.
Not even back porch. Leave a loaded .30-06 leaning up against the bedpost. They wake up in the morning. They open the
window
and look out. Is there a deer out there? Yes or no. If there's a deer out there, is it worth taking? Yes or no. Shoot the fucker.
Wow.
How many deer can I get on one tag? If you process them quick enough.
Yikes.
Well, I also know some people that don't necessarily have deer tags, but they do have a garage with exposed rafters and a wading pool in there.
And I just happen to have a stainless steel bench from a meat butcher shop. So Kevin, we will still see Uber posts. I'm pretty certain. I have a feeling.
I don't think so. They take so damn long.
2016, I think. I think later this year. I get a feeling.
I'm not going to say it's not possible, but it's just I'm not. Maybe, first off, I was cranking them out at the rate of about one a month there for quite a while.
Yeah.
That ceased quite a while back.
Well, but you're good. I was doing Uber posts are like they're like a short novel. You're putting out like novelettes.
I have to say, though, the best compliment I think I've ever gotten about one was from AE pilot Jim. It was either him or you, and I'm not sure exactly which one it was, but it was on Vicious Circle. I think it was you, actually, who said something about it was like staring up at the obelisk in 2001 Space Odyssey.
That was me.
It was.
That was me.
I felt
like one of the monkeys looking at the monolith. I could hear the ominous music playing in the background, and I just felt like flinging my own poo. I'm reading this going,
What's even better is I believe I read my first Kevin Baker mega post printed out on paper while sitting on the toilet. And
put out the internet and read it to me.
Among other places, I don't take that long, but it takes me a heck of a lot longer to download than it takes to read a Kevin Baker Uber post. But since that time, it's gone to the smartphone and or tablet is a good place to read an Uber post in comfort.
Yeah, Kevin's posts are too big for a phone.
Find yourself a good adult beverage, kick back, and read. Because if you bother to go through the links, it's going to be a while.
Yep. Hey, thanks for calling, Jay.
Thanks, guys. Kevin, good job. Good talking to you. And we'll see you around.
Take it easy. Right.
So now... Jay led down an interesting path there. Is so you're saying that the Uber posts may be dead?
They first off, they take a long time. I have to really have some motivation to write them, and that motivation has been going over the last couple of years.
What was your motivation?
I was pissed.
Oh, you're pissed. You're not pissed anymore?
I'm still pissed.
But? Okay. Yeah, I think that says it all.
it's an awful lot of work for not a lot of return.
Yeah.
And I've said it before. That's the other thing is I haven't got anything new to say. So repeating myself is not of a lot of use.
Right. I think that's valuable, though. I think quitting while you're ahead, and it's kind of like, you know, Fonzie jumping the shark. You know, it's like at a certain point you're like, okay, well, this is what it is, and I've said what I need to say, and I'm done. I think there's great value in that. I mean, I think diluting the message at a certain point kind of weakens it. You know what I'm saying?
Part of what I, you know, I kept on doing it, kept on doing it, and kept on doing it was because there's always a new audience.
Okay.
I probably have a regular following of, I don't know, honestly, I don't know, probably a couple hundred people maybe.
Okay.
Who come and hit the blog once a day or you know, a couple times a week or whatever. Have me on RSS feeder or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get links and people come from message boards and stuff. If I write an Uber post, I get kind of an uptick in traffic.
Right.
So I'm writing for new people. But even that after a while kind of fades with it because realistically, the TLDR thing is real.
Right.
People are not going to read a 5,000 word essay. They're just not.
Nope.
People don't even like to scroll anymore. People are like, well, if I have to scroll, forget it.
Well, you know, you remember back in when, say, Uncle started blogging.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was listening to Vicious Circle 78 by coincidence today, and you talked about that exact thing. When he first started blogging, he wrote blog posts, and I liked him because I read those things.
Yeah.
You know, I liked it when he sat down and expounded on stuff and waxed philosophical. That's the kind of stuff I like to read. And you said yourself in that particular blog post that you started blogging because Stephen Denbest stopped.
That's right.
And Stephen wrote the most awesome freaking posts.
Yes, he did. Not that I ever...
I missed that. I mean, I understand why he quit and went over and started doing anime stuff, but I missed those posts.
I do too.
I liked that stuff. That was the stuff that really got me.
I don't claim to be even in the same football stadium
me
as
either.
Stephen Denbest. Well, you're closer to him than I am.
But I like reading long pieces that make me think, and realistically, the only places that I can find that now seem to be on the commercial, like NRO
but even those aren't that long.
No, they generally are stuck to 800 to 1,000 words.
Yeah, well, it's you know, it's a newspaper story style.
Yeah, right. City Journal's pretty good.
Sometimes the Atlantic will run a long thing,
but you know, for the most part, you aren't going to find that in blogs anymore. And people, I'd write them, and people wouldn't read them. And you go back and I check my stats. Everybody, we talked about this in that thing. We check our stats.
Yep.
And the two most popular posts that I have ever put up are videos from YouTube.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
That, you know, that just linked to me.
Yeah.
The third most popular post I put up was a reprint of a Usenet story about J. David Phillips getting stabbed by a guy with a samurai sword, and he shot him with a 25 ACP.
Hmm.
But the first post that I wrote that actually ranks high in traffic, I got 4,775 hits on.
Yeah, I was going to say those ones that got the most views were just basically links to something else.
They were. I actually posted the video.
Yeah.
But it was the one of them's 522,000 hits, and the other one's 419,000 hits.
Wow.
The 25 ACP one was 8,000 hits.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that kind of that I almost say if you really, you know, because every blogger always said, oh, I don't care, you know, I'm in it for myself. I never said that. But a lot of people do say that.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is you check your stats and you look, it's like training, right? Your readers train you to write the post they want to look at.
No.
Or click
no,
on.
I won't say that about myself. I wrote what I wanted to write.
Right.
I was just shocked about what would draw traffic and comments and what would.
Yeah, but if you're looking for traffic, you're gonna naturally gravitate to the style and posts that generate more traffic.
I just kept posting what I was going to post and going, I wish they'd read this stuff because it took a long time.
That's because you're different.
Yeah, I know. I'm quite aware of that.
I'm actually a little different.
As Brita said a long time ago, thank you for being weird with me.
That's right. She did say that.
Yes,
you did.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah, in the post after the vicious circle after William the Corner died. You said, you found a community of people who were weird like you, and thank you for being weird with me. And that's exactly what this is. That's realistically what blogging did for me. Was it gave me a community of like-minded people?
Yes.
And I really like that. I mean, I travel for work occasionally. I have to go different places around the country for training or for work or whatever. And wherever I go, I can post on the blog, or I could post on the blog, I'm going to be XYZ such and such a time. Anybody want to get together? And I would meet people that I would never have met any other way.
Yeah. It's wonderful. Every single time it's wonderful.
You know, the most bizarre one was when they had the NRA convention in Phoenix, and I drove up to Phoenix and got to the convention center and got parked, and on the way down I'm walking down the ramp in the parking garage, and there's somebody coming up, and I had their window rolled down, and I said, you need to go up a couple more floors before you'll find an empty space. They said, thanks, Kevin, and went off their merry way, and I had no freaking idea who the hell they were. And it was Lab Rat and Stingray. They recognized me, but I didn't know who they were.
That's great.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, I had this conversation with someone not too long ago about, about blog fame and about, whatever. And the real reason I started blogging was because I was, I can't remember when I started blogging, but it wasn't too long after I had gotten married, and I didn't really have a whole lot of friends. And because, you get kind of isolated after you get married. You have your spouse, and you have your job, and everybody has their own life.
I was isolated before I got married, Brita.
Well, I kind of was too. And I, it was, and then on top of all of that, I was kind of having this kind of philosophical epiphany in my life. I hadn't been, prior to this, I hadn't been paying attention to politics or issues or anything like that. And then everything changed, and I started paying attention, and all of a sudden I found myself kind of, stranded. And Mike pointed me to the internet. He said, you read these people, just read them. And here's some blogs you can read. And honestly, Kevin, you were one of those.
Thank you.
And no, thank you. And it was, it was finding a group of like-minded people. And politics aside and gun activism aside, I think that was, and I think a lot of bloggers find that. We find our group, and I know Nancy Randall always calls it our tribe. And,
yes.
And really that's kind of what it is, that's where activism starts, really. That's a grassroots thing. So.
It is, yeah. It's like Rob Allen says, the anti-gun people don't have anti-gun conventions and trips to the anti-gun range. Look at the Gun Blogger Rendezvous thing. We're coming up on 9 years of that.
Yeah.
And I've met more people. I mean, you said you were, you're not particularly outgoing and you're kind of an introvert, and I was a long time an introvert. I'm not anymore, but I used to be. And I have met more people through blogging than anything else I have ever been associated with, including work. And when the first Gun Blogger Rendezvous came around, I went because I wanted to go meet some of these people that I read.
Yeah.
And I still do it for the same reason. And it's the same reason I went to the NRA convention, was to meet people that I couldn't meet any other way.
Yes. And I had a giant fangirl moment when I met you in Phoenix because, oh my God, Kevin Baker.
Well,
oh my God.
You.
Yeah.
The weirdest thing that's ever happened to me was I had a guy actually hunt me down on the floor of the NRA convention.
Okay.
He goes, "I've been looking for you for hours." And I went, "Who the hell are you? And should I be afraid?" You know, but it was just, yeah. He was just a reader and he wanted to meet me. That was kind of neat. You know, when you think about it. But, you know, I've read these people's
post-walking. I don't know how this is going to happen again. You know, this sort of community type feeling. I don't know how people are going to find each other this way anymore.
Podcasts. It's the future.
It is totally.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm one of the guys that downloads the podcast and listens to them after the fact. I very seldom think about getting online and listening to it live.
Well, we live in China.
It's because it's a time thing, right?
I mean,
I almost never, I mean, the only reason I listen to this live is because I have to do it. I mean, I don't watch network TV. I don't listen to terrestrial radio. I don't do any of that stuff. I mean, everything I do and watch is time shifted and it's consumed on my schedule, not the schedule that was produced on it. I mean, thank goodness we have some people that really like the show and listen to it live, because we are a live call-in show. Hint, hint.
Yes, call in. Talk to Kevin.
And, you know, it's you can't do that. I mean, we're actually one of the few podcasts that does this, and one of the reasons is because people consume podcasts on their own time. They don't go, "Oh, it's Thursday at, you know, 8 or 9 or whatever. We better tune into the Squirrel Report."
Yep.
Yeah. And, I mean, even when they do too.
Listening right now.
Yeah. To defend those, you know, those people who are listening to us, you know, as we are recorded, you know, is one of those things of the, yeah, no, I used to, you know, Penn Jillette runs a fantastic podcast every week and he does it live. And, I used to watch it live all the time. And then I got a baby. and now happens. It's one of those, I am never free when his podcast goes live anymore. And so because of that, I'm always listening to it recorded. And it's not as good an experience. Hint, hint to those people who might be free on Thursday evenings. But you know, it's definitely, you know, a much better experience to be listening to it live. Especially if you've got the chat going on, you know, with Pens, you've got a video feed. So there's a visual component added to it. But, you know, you can call in, hint, hint.
Yeah.
Well, just let me do this. Going down the list of people who are currently in the chat, I've met Jay. I've met you, Alan. Beard, we met, didn't we?
We sure
at
did.
At one of the NRA conventions.
Yep.
I believe I met Borpatch at the Dallas shoot. Cowboy Blob, Nancy Randall, Sean Sorrentino. Brita, I met your mom at the... Mexican yeah. restaurant in Phoenix.
That was good.
It was. So that's a pretty fair number of people who are sitting in chat right now.
Yeah.
Who are all over the freaking country. And that's pretty freaking unique when you come to think about it. So who's going to come to the Gunblogger Rendezvous this year?
Oh my gosh. You know, that's one of the things I've always wanted to go to.
Yeah, me too.
It's a lot of fun.
It's on the list with, like, Boomer Shoot.
I've done both.
And I've done the research, Brita.
What?
You started your Live Journal blog in 2005.
Oh, my God. A million years ago.
You started
Are you going to do the research on my pitiful
you
Live
started,
Journal
blog? You started your Blogger blog in 2007.
Ah, okay.
Oh, actually, my Live Journal is probably doesn't give the actual timeline, because when I first started, it was completely private. It was hidden from all but my friends, because I actually started it because I was still a fisheries observer, and it was for the sole purpose of I was going out to sea, and then I was coming home, and I didn't know when those things were going to happen, so I wanted to know where my friends were and what they were doing. And so the Live Journal was really, really good for, you know, but, you know, seeing who was around and who was doing what. And so I could easily have a normal social life despite my horrible job.
We have a caller.
Yay!
It's MDev.
Well, hello.
Hey, MDev.
Hi, MDev.
Greetings.
Hey. I was purely calling in to say hi to Kevin Baker.
Hi, back.
I've read you off and on for a while. I won't say I've read every, 5,000 word diatribe, but the ones I've read are spectacular. So
the 5,000 word ones are the short ones.
Yeah, this is true.
Well, that is true. But, unfortunately, I started reading you when I was in college. So when I saw a long block of text, I was like, nope, looks like a textbook. Move on.
That's because they were textbooks.
Oh, is that why? They're probably better than most of the textbooks I had.
So. They were textbooks with footnotes.
Yeah, exactly. So I was pretty much just calling in to say hi to the group because it's been a month since I've had a chance to call in.
It has been a while.
But yes, we've missed our MDev segment.
Well, if you would just schedule this at a time where I wasn't starting work as you queued this up,
Oh, well, we will change our schedule just for you.
Thank you. See, that's all I ask. That's all I ask. But I think everything you guys have said about, the blogging being essentially that, it's changing or morphing, maybe it's dead, I don't know. But about being, being where we meet our tribe, it's so true. Because I've met very few actual gut bloggers, even though I feel like I know you all. But, I've announced multiple times, to my wife, we're going to an NRA convention, or we are going to Gun Blogger Rendezvous. And it has nothing to do with the actual convention at NRA or whatever. It's going to be the, hang out and meet you all, so.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's
and
what it's for.
Now we all have our Squirrel Report t-shirts because,
That's right. I want to know when you guys are going to make the
smug
robes.
Mine's on order.
Going to make the what?
The
smug
what?
Robes. You don't remember the smug robes?
Huh?
Do I have to make a what?
You guys don't remember those, do you?
Oh, is this the stingray thing?
Yes.
I have a smug robe in my closet.
You do.
Stingray and Labrat sent me one.
I was listening to that episode week before
I
last.
I have
on
it
my way
in
to
my
a
closet,
job site, and I almost wrecked the truck when that came on. I was laughing so hard.
Yeah, I still have it. I don't know what to do with it.
I gotta say that every once in a while I look at the download stats for Vicious Circle, and I'm still stunned that those people are still downloading those shows and listening to them. And it's not, it's not thousands, but it's definitely hundreds every month. It's shocking.
They're hysterical. They really are. God.
Well, where else do you find that kind of quality humor?
Yeah. Oh, speaking of shirts, we're up to 54 sold now,
what?
Which is just stunning.
Oh my God.
Congratulations, 54. See, and you were worried about reaching 30.
I was.
He was.
I thought we'd hit 24 install, and I'd have to buy the rest just so people could get shirts.
Before I let you guys go, did we already have a recognition of, Alan becoming the crazy cat lady?
Yes. Yes. Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, then
he has acquired a shopping cart and a chest freezer.
I gotta say, I am not a cat person, but your video of your cat chasing the green laser put me into so much hysterical because everybody's got a laser pointer for the cat. Nobody's got the green laser pointer for the cat. So that was the perfect combination of geek video and cat video.
Cool. That's actually it's a laser that was actually designed for star spotting. Like when you go out with a telescope. It's actually much more powerful than the laser on a laser sight. The green laser on a laser sight. It's like a 1 watt laser. And it,
you can burn your cat with that.
Yeah, you about can if you can hold it still long enough. But it's actually designed that so that you, if you go outside and shine it up through the atmosphere, you can actually see the beam. And it's designed so that you can, when you go out with your telescope, you can point to a star at, you know, for somebody else and go, that one right there. And they go, oh, okay. So
you just out-geeked the geek green laser. Yeah. I see what it is. You got to one-up us at all.
Yeah, I am a recovering inner nerd, and sometimes I slip up. So
don't recover. There's good money in being an inner nerd.
Yeah. Just mostly just
all right, I'll let you all go. Have a good one.
Thanks, MDev. Well.
Also for MDev saying that he feels like he knows all of us but hasn't met us in person. I remember the first NRA show where it was me, Alan, Brita, and Jay and a few other people all sitting around a table having some food, and I just realized, geez, this is pretty much exactly like Vicious Circle.
Yeah, it kind of was.
It doesn't change much.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Meeting you guys did really change a whole lot.
No, it's just three dimensional.
Yes. And the lighting's better.
And we were mostly dressed.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Speaking of people calling in, we have Dennis on the line.
Hey, Dennis.
Hello, folks.
It's the leather goods maker to the stars.
Well, it's the leather goods maker not to the stars, not yet. Hopefully, coming soon. But anyway, I wanted to call in, say hi to...
Happy birthday, Dennis.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to say hi to you three and also to Kevin. I never got a chance to meet the guy or speak to him.
I'm not dead yet.
Well, no.
This is not a eulogy.
It's blog death, not real death.
No, it's just the blog death thing. But
I'm going to blog senility. Come on.
You know the one NRA show I missed is the one he went to.
I've been to several, but you go ahead.
No, I said I didn't go to Houston. You, from what I understand, you were at the Houston
one. I was at the Houston one, yeah.
And I don't recall you being at Pittsburgh or St. Louis.
No, I've never been to either one of those. The farthest east I went to the first one I went to was in Louisville, Kentucky.
That was the first big blog NRA convention.
Yeah, that's why I went.
And it's going to be back in Louisville next year.
I won't be going to that one again because I have to fly, and if I have to fly, I won't do it.
Ah, okay.
If I can drive there, I'll go.
Anyway, I wanted to call because aside from, you know, through emails, but actually, to thank you in person, one of the very first reviews of one of my holsters, along with Uncle, Jay, Weird, was Kevin.
I've got two of your holsters. I've got one for my M&P and one for my 1911 that you gave me. That was the first one I reviewed, and it's still my favorite holster.
Look at that. You see that? And that's wonderful. And, Alan, you said you cannot believe that people are still downloading VC.
No.
Even though I've stopped offering the VC logo on holsters, I still get emails from people going, can you put that logo on a holster if I paid you extra?
Wow.
Weird.
Hey, I would buy one.
Are they from China?
Well, you still can, I guess.
and you still can. And now, just, you know, real quick, because I know there's probably one more person hanging on the line, and it's getting close to the end here. Alan, did you see the picture of the rig I made for Gay Cynic?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I want you to picture that rig, but instead of the eagle head embossing surrounded by those rhinestones and with rabbit fur, just think of a squirrel's tail hanging down the front with the squirrel report embossed on the side there.
Oh, dear God, no.
that's what I was talking about months ago, and I still have to order the embossing plate. Ugh. Haven't gotten around to actually being able to convert your image to anything usable. So if you have a PDF of that image, send it to me so I can get a holster made.
I'll see what
with
I can
a
come
squirrel
up with.
Tail on it.
Does it have to be a PDF?
Vector or PDF? Pick one.
Okay.
Because it's cut on a CAD machine or something.
All right. I'll see what I can do.
And then I'll make one with a squirrel's tail hanging off the front there. And
oh, God.
There you go, buddy.
But if you do that, I can't,
with your shirt.
If you do that, I can't wear it.
Yes, you can.
Because it's Texas.
Why not? Texas is getting open carry.
You know what? And that's funny. And I'll talk Texas politics for a second because I've been dying to. You know what's funny is all of a sudden the TSRA has decided they're supporting open carry now. And I swear to God, I think the reason they're doing it is because Oklahoma did it last year. And, you know, they got that whole Texas-Oklahoma rivalry thing going. And I think, I think that's the only reason they're doing it.
Well, you know what? I'm holding out hope that you guys get open carry because I want to, not only do I want to make one with the squirrel's tail and the squirrel fur, but I want to adorn it with so many frickin' rhinestones.
Oh, God.
More, at least three times as many as what Gay Sinek got.
Why would you do that to me?
I
because
wear
it's
it.
Texas.
You can send it to Brita. She'll wear it.
No, because it's Texas. I mean, Texas gave us, what's that? What was that movie with John Travolta and dancing and
Saturday Night Fever?
No, it was the Texas one. I can't remember. It
was
in
Houston. Yeah, the Texas Saturday Night Fever. Boy, howdy. That, you know, I think Texas, and it's got to be big and over the top.
No.
And it's got to be red, white, and blue.
Yeah, Alan, don't you go to barbecues?
Oh, yeah, it was Urban Cowboy. That's what it was.
Urban Cowboy, there you go. Yeah. Anyway, pleasure saying hi to everybody. I'll let you guys go. You have a great evening, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Right, thanks, Dennis.
You could wear that with your kilt, Alan.
No.
Yeah.
No. We have another caller.
Okay.
It's area code 423 and somewhere in Tennessee, I think.
Are you there?
Yes, we're here.
Hey, this is the Packet Man.
Hey, Packet Man.
I'm actually calling from Northwest Georgia, but I have a Chattanooga phone number.
That's what it is then.
Yeah. Hey, I just called to say hello to Kevin. I met him at the Lucky Gunner machine gun shoot.
Wasn't that fun?
Yeah, it sure was. And I didn't even shoot anything.
I didn't shoot a lot.
I didn't shoot a single thing. I just enjoyed all the smiles on everybody's faces. Seeing Jennifer shooting the 50 cal was pretty fun. She got some big grins on her face that day.
I think my favorite thing from the whole trip was watching one of the Lucky Gunner gun bunnies shoot a BAR. And she fired a couple rounds and then ripped off the rest of the magazine. And I swear to God, that smile wrapped all the way around her head.
Yeah, there were lots of people that were pleasantly surprised with machine guns and NFA toys. Yeah, that was pretty good. And also getting to meet a lot of bloggers that I read, like Sean and Ken Blanchard.
Yep.
Got to meet you. Got to meet Say Uncle. A bunch of others I can't even think of right off the top of my head. And, of course, now, if I had known that you were
you should have at least fired the Napoleon cannon. That thing was outstanding.
I didn't have a spare $20 that I could put into it. Yeah. And if I had known that you were in Footloose, I would have been much more starstruck than I was.
It never gets old.
Yeah, it never does. And I'm sad to hear that you're going to be cutting back on your hours there. Of course, I don't get a lot of chance to read you a lot, but I check your feed every single day. And you know, when something looks like it's going to interest me, I make a point to try to read it. But I'll certainly miss you there, because I know you've always got good points to make.
Well, the feed will still be there, just won't be much in it.
Well, I'll keep checking it every day.
Okay.
Yep.
I appreciate that.
Well, just wanted to say hello, and y'all have a good night, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Thanks for calling. Cool.
By the way, Kevin, have you ever had a chance to meet Mark Adelphia? Because I won't lie, that is my single biggest pleasure from your blog, is watching him get stomped over and over and over again and saying
it was entertaining, but after a while it stopped being entertaining and started just being irritating.
Which is
why I put I didn't actually kick him off. We did the vote, and it was actually closer than I thought it was going to be. But I'm not upset with the way it turned out, and I'm actually pretty glad that he's abided by it, because I have not banned him. If he wants to come back, he can come back. But he was politely asked to make himself scarce, and he did. So he still seems to troll the place, and he apparently writes blog posts over at his blog about what I write at mine. And he followed me over to Quora when I was I started going to Quora just for the target rich environment. Yeah, and I've done 11 years worth of research. I wanted someplace I could go use it on new people, and it was content I could go cut and paste and post it on my blog instead of sitting down and writing another essay. And so he followed me over there, which did that make him a stalker?
Yes,
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, yeah.
We have another caller. It's the area code 508. Hello.
Hey, it's Art Adelph.
Hey, Arctic Health.
Well, I wanted to call in and thank Kevin for all of the years of research that he's done to put up on the internet for the rest of us to throw at more unsuspecting people.
I appreciate greatly that somebody's using it for that, because that's really kind of why I did it.
Once I got done reading it, and I think I've read most of the archive there. I've been pointing people at it, because it's better written than anything I'm going to have time to do, and it's a hell of a lot easier to say go read Kevin than to rewrite something. So
yeah, I kind of wonder if I have. I actually got linked by some university somewhere that the post I did on ballistic fingerprinting doesn't and won't work. That's actually linked. That's actually linked at some university as an example of essentially why ballistic fingerprinting doesn't and won't work, which I thought was pretty freaking cool.
Does that mean you're cited in some academic research, or is
I very
just...
well maybe I don't know. Well, I just it was well, just a link probably, on the link on the university's website.
Cool. You're probably at least cited in some professor's syllabus then.
I certainly hope so.
The follow-on question there is like Brita, when she quit blogging and moved everything over to Facebook, where are you going next? Is your Twitter feed going to get some life, or
doesn't my Twitter feed have like 3 tweets, and the first one is I don't tweet?
Last I heard, your Twitter feed was entirely from one of the NRA comps, I think Arizona.
I haven't checked it, so I really don't know what's there. The only reason I set up a Twitter account was because when we were doing one of the NRA cons, that was how they were spreading the information around to all the bloggers that were coming.
I think that was Phoenix.
And that might have been Phoenix. So that's the only reason I've got it.
The only reason I have a Twitter feed is so I can find the Spore Report chat. But
you have to understand, Twitter's, what, 140 characters? Right. But I don't do 140 characters.
Kevin can't say hello in 140 characters.
Well, so it'll be a new and interesting format for you.
Well, that's actually a good question, Kevin. Where are you? Where do you do your social media stuff at? I mean, you're not...
I have a Facebook page.
He doesn't use at all.
No, that's not true. I don't use it much. I think I've put up 3 or 4 things in the last 3 or 4 days.
Okay.
Basically, I use that for communication to my daughter and grandkids.
Oh.
And you know, my sister and my sister posts stuff about – my sister's the one who's been following my mom's medical stuff. So she posts all the statuses of that. That's why I keep track of that.
You know, it's almost like we need two different social media things. It's like you need one for just your family and stuff because it's kind of hard to get away from them. And then, but you also need non-family, and Facebook really doesn't make that easy.
No,
you can just make groups in Facebook.
Well, the blog was for, you know, the blog was the non-family stuff. My family doesn't read what I write,
right?
So you know, that's okay. I have been spending quite a bit of time at Quora. I don't think I'll be doing a lot of that much anymore. I mean, I'll probably still post over there, but I'm not going to sit down and write the Uber posts over there. So I'll be reading and I'll be commenting.
Good.
Yay.
So I still like blogs. I'm just kind of tired of writing one.
Yeah, it happens.
You know, as somebody who quit blogging.
You're going to one good to speak, Alan, because, you know, when was the last time you updated yours?
Oh, gosh. Well, which one?
Your Snarky Bike.
Because the Squirrel Report gets updated all the time.
It gets updated twice a week, just before you have the show and just after you have the show.
My last post was January 23rd, 2014.
Exactly.
And it was a video of me sliding down a hill.
Yep.
And the – yeah.
Well, as somebody who has, like, you know, officially quit blogging, I want to say that you do get this kind of sense of freedom that you're not beholden to anybody. Like, cause that was like a great weight for me when I was blogging. I felt like I was beholden to all these people reading me and, you know, I needed to produce material and, you know, it was kind of like this weird peer pressure almost. And
that way for me, it was pressure on myself because I felt like I had something I wanted to say and I wanted people to read it.
Right.
So in order for people to read it, I had to have content. Somebody that was, you know, people were going to have to come visit to see it.
Right.
So I had to post something every day to have at least an audience.
Right.
So that when I did sit down and crank out 7,000 words, somebody'd be there to read it and maybe spread it around.
Yeah. And there came a point also for me, I was like, well, you know, there are people who get paid to do this sort of thing.
Jay. And I thought,
well, even before Jay, you know, blogs started monetizing and there was this whole thing about ads and about monetizing and about, you know, all sorts of things like that. And I said to myself, you know, I'm not interested in that. That's not what I'm here for. And I think, you know, it started to be the beginning of the end for me. And, you know, I was reading, this is kind of how I got to got you on the show was I was reading Sankel today and I saw that you were, you know, he linked to your blog and I said, oh my gosh, Kevin. And I read your post and I thought it was very poignant in a way because it was, you listed your reasons for quitting and all of those reasons were real life reasons, mm-hmm. You know, the important stuff, the not sitting in front of a computer stuff, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Your wife and your mother and your family and that sort of thing. And I think blogging had changed in sort of a way where it became like this more monetized commercial, you know, thing instead of just a guy on the internet talking to other guys on the internet.
Well, but as soon as you feel like you have to do it every day, that starts to sound an awful lot like work. And
exactly. And that's what it was for me.
Better send a check.
Right.
For me, it was a matter of, for a long time, for several years, it was a matter of there being, it was like drinking out of a fire hose. There was always something I wanted to make a comment about.
Right.
So it wasn't that big a deal. But, and you brought this up earlier, Alan, that the sheer number of people who are doing it now, there's somebody else out there doing it and they're generally doing it better than I do. So I don't have to.
I don't know about that.
Well, it depends. You know, what I do with the Uber posts, I don't think anybody else does anymore.
No.
But I, like I said, I was doing that for a while. I was doing those once a month, And then I got down to doing it three or four times a year, and now it's nowhere near that. But the daily stuff, the just throw up a comment and a link to something and do a couple of paragraphs about it. Yeah, there's a lot of people out there that do it better than I am. Say Uncle is top of the list. Tam, there's nobody better at doing something funny than Tam. And she's usually just sharper than hell about it. And she's the first place I stop every morning when I start looking at blogs. Tam is my first stop, and Say Uncle's my second, without fail. And
even with Say Uncle, I've been noticing that he's like 2 days behind in the news. I mean, he's basically like a news guy. He talks about the headlines, and he's like two days late for me. And so I'm like, well, you know what? I could read the news on my own. Sorry, Chance, but
he finds some interesting stuff that other people don't. And
I think there's a lot of value to guys like Say Uncle. If you follow his feed, you probably know everything that's going on, unless you have some very niche interest. And similarly with Tam, if you read hers, you probably know what's going on.
Anyway, but
yeah,
it's just that other people are doing it. I don't need to do it anymore. I don't really have anything. If I don't think I have anything unique to say about something, I'm not going to say it. And everything that I want to say, I've probably said before. So I'm
so read the archives.
Yeah, read the archives. I'm tired of repeating myself.
Yes. Well, at a certain point, that's it.
So are you going to spend time, like, collating your archives and, you know, categorizing them and Dewey decimalizing and, you know?
No.
You should turn them into a book.
I can't. Think about this. I discussed this with somebody online the other day or a few months ago, whatever it was. The majority of my Uber posts, or at least half of my Uber posts, are somebody else's words.
That's true.
Most of what I've done are excerpts from books or other people's posts or, you know, whatever. They're other people's words. And getting copyright permission for all that stuff is going to be impossible.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Plus, the thing about blogging and the thing I loved about blogging is that you stick the hyperlink in the text. You want someone to go back to the root, to the source material, and read the whole thing. You put the link in and say, go look. That does not work in dead tree form.
Ebook.
Great.
Well, you could.
I have a blog.
Go read that.
Go read that.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Whoa, excuse me.
All right, before we get over time, I got to ask, I mean, Kevin, you stated like Arizona's constitutional carry. What have you seen changed in your gun blogging time that was a complete surprise to you?
That was one. I did not expect. If you'd asked me in 2003 if we were going to get first a Supreme Court decision declaring the right to arms to be individual, and second, another decision incorporating it under the 14th Amendment, I would have laughed at you. I did not expect that to happen. And let me go on further to say that the coolest thing I think that's ever come out of me being a blogger was getting to meet Alan Gura.
That was pretty awesome.
I mean, I called his office after the Heller decision. No, after the
McDonald
decision. No, it was the Heller decision. I called his office after hours, expecting to get his. If I'd expected the voicemail box to be full, but I was going to call and leave a voicemail message, and I got him. He was in the office answering the freaking phone. And I talked to him for a couple minutes and thanked him very much. And then he came to the Gunblogger Rendezvous.
Yep.
Twice.
Cool. Yeah. Cool guy.
He is very a hell cool of a guy. Cool guy. And I've just invited him to come again. And he said he'll think about it. He'll see what he can do. So if you're thinking about coming, this year might be a good year.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might meet a future Supreme Court justice.
Damn straight.
I don't know anybody else that has a resume like his.
I don't either.
And so someday we're going to get somebody that's got their head out of their ass.
For pure constitutional, you know, his cases in front of the Supreme Court were not, you know, interpretations of this or that or some technicality. I mean, these were earth-shattering cases in civil rights legislation. This was the
He basically bankrupted the Brady campaign.
Yeah,
I mean when the Brady campaign can no longer say, well, it's a radical interpretation of the Second Amendment to say that it's an individual right, when the Supreme Court goes, hey, yeah, it's an individual right.
And not only this, not, and that wasn't a split decision. That was all, every single judge.
Yeah, they all said it. Even the ones that want to gut it, right, still said it's an individual right.
Exactly.
And when he stands there in front of the justices and says to Sotomayor, states may have grown accustomed to violating the rights of American citizens, but that does not bootstrap those violations into something that is constitutional.
Yeah.
You want to stand up and cheer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was
yep,
awesome. Just freaking awesome. That was the biggest thing for me. When I started writing in 2003, I was coming in as a gun rights advocate. Who had looked at it. I'd started studying it at about 93 when I met the woman that I married. And that was the first time I'd ever met anybody who everything they knew about guns and gun owners came from the media.
Yikes.
And it surprised me, you know, because, my family is Scotch-Irish rednecks. You know, that's where I'm from, and everybody had guns.
Yep.
I looked at the laws they were passing, thinking, oh, it's another stupid feel-good law that doesn't do anything. And then I started researching it and went, hey, they're trying to disarm us. And the further I dug in, it was not they're just trying to disarm us. They're trying to destroy basically the Bill of Rights. And they're winning.
Yep.
And I'm pissed. And you people need to wake the hell up. And that's why I got started. I was pissed off. I'm still pissed off. The schools, the education system in this country is still an indoctrination center.
It's even worse now than it
well,
was.
And that was something else. That, you know, for me, I write about the right to arms. I write about education. I write about politics, and all of those are tightly interwoven. All education, especially all primary education, is indoctrination. It has to be. The question is, what do you indoctrinate with? What are you indoctrinating? What are you teaching the kids? And what we're teaching them is collectivism.
Sure.
And this is not the nation of collectivists. But we certainly have gotten there. We now have a larger proportion of the population taking money from the government than giving money, having money taken from us by the government.
Yep.
We can't sustain that. We're spending more money than we're taking in by leaps and bounds, and that cannot be maintained. You know, like I said in the post, Tough History Coming has been one of the staples of the blog since I started it, and I still believe that. Tough History's coming. And I don't see any way to stop it, and I don't see any way to even slow it down. And that's tiring, and it wears you out.
That's true. It
you know,
does.
As say Uncle said when the post that he linked to that to mine, he said he's decided to basically enjoy the decline. I wish I could, but that's why I posted that Calvin and Hobbes cartoon. You know, that basically said it better than I could, and when somebody else uses words better than I can, I let them.
Well, yeah, I have no words.
Bill Watterson does.
Yeah.
But he doesn't do it anymore.
Well, he got through.
He got tired of it too.
He was done.
The secret to happiness is short-term stupid self-interest. You know, that's why I named the post The Secret to Happiness. It's too late for me. The rest of you may be able to save yourselves. I don't know.
Run away. And you know, in a way it is. You know, ignorance kind of is bliss. That's why there's so many happy people in the country.
It's bliss until, I mean...
Well, until you get smacked upside the head and then...
Well, know. I've posted Kipling's... damn it, what's the name of that poem? Gods of the Copybook Headings probably 4 times on the blog.
Yes.
Because that's... You know, that basically is the definition of what it is to be human, apparently. I'm one of the books I'm reading right now is a book about the why. You know, Thomas Sowell's one of my favorite people, and he wrote a Conflict of Visions, where he describes the difference between the left and the right and how they're different. What he doesn't address is why they're different. He doesn't even touch that. But he says, you know, they have this vision. It's what he calls it, is a vision, a precognitive expectation of how the world works. And I picked up a book the other day, which I don't have in front of me, that basically says, and Bill Whittle's been talking about this in his video cast, Stratosphere Lounge. I don't know if you guys ever watch Stratosphere Lounge, but Bill Whittle does in video blogs basically what I do in written blog. And he says, you know, basically there are two types of people who are represented by biology is what does it. Weird, you may find this interesting. He talks about R-type people and K-type people, where R-type people are the ones who are represented by the biology of, for example, rabbits, where if you have unlimited resources, the most successful reproductive strategy is fuck like rabbits and reproduce. And K-type strategy is where resources are very, very limited. It's the strategy of wolves. Take care. Don't wait until you're ready to take care of young before you have them. Stay in a monogamous relationship. Only have enough that you can take care of. Don't have 4 billion. And humanity spreads itself, or basically splits itself along those two lines. And when we have a culture of great abundance, the R-type people take over, and they have certain psychological behaviors. And when things are really tough, the K-type people take over, and they have a different set of biological behaviors.
Hmm.
And that is why we have a cycle throughout history of going from great hardship to great, you know, surplus, and then we crash right back down again without too much later because, you know, the different biologies rule. It's kind of an interesting argument.
That is interesting.
And if you look at, you know, we've had 50 years of great abundance, and the people that, you know, who are basically running things are the ones who are saying, hey, run around, screw everybody. You don't have to worry about having a husband. You can have kids, as many kids as you want, and so on and so forth. And the conservatives are the ones saying, no, you need to do things. And it's the rabbit or the grasshopper and the ant thing. You see it repeatedly in mythology. So it is an interesting argument, and it's a matter of, look, there's nothing you can do about it. We're going to crash. Bummer. Prepare for the crash.
Well, yeah, at a certain point, you got to just, like, you know. It's like, you know, it's like you see the – I don't know if you watch, you know, NASCAR racing. You know, they have the inside the car – videos, right? Mm-hmm. And the one that really struck me was the one that they had a while back. That was the video of, and I forget who it was, but they were gonna. It was the video, and it's like at a certain point, they're taught that when the wreck is going to happen, you stop trying to control the car because you can't, mm-hmm. and you start trying to minimize the damage the wreck is going to do to you. Mm-hmm. And so they teach them to let go of the steering wheel, you know, put their arms up next to their helmet to cushion the blow of their head, and you know, stuff like that. And it's kind of that that's kind of what you're talking about. You know, at a certain point, you're not controlling the wreck. You're not controlling the trajectory anymore. And you just, you know, at a certain point, you're just trying to minimize the damage.
Yeah. You're just along for the ride.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's part of it. And I don't see, for a long time, it was fight and fight and fight to stop the coming, you know, catastrophe and I don't see any way to stop the coming catastrophe. And one of the things that I actually pulled down as a link for one of the things I was going to stick in my essay was a comment or a posting over at Quora, where this guy was talking about what he thinks about conservatives. And the first paragraph is, "The world they inhabit is a scary, scary place filled with monsters that they are constantly being besieged by. The federal government, lazy, unruly brown people who commit crimes and appropriate their hard-earned tax dollars, liberal bureaucracy, liberal media trying to brainwash them, Chinese planning an attack on them, Islamic terrorists threatening to attack them, Russians trying to attack them, lascivious gays trying to seduce them and gain access to children, nanny state secret police coming to take their guns in the middle of the night, leaving them unarmed. ACA death tribunals, expensive gasoline being forced by CFL bulbs and recycled by eco-terrorists, or being told by the First Lady to eat healthier. They live in a grotesque house of cartoon horrors that bears little resemblance to the decidedly complex yet quotidian world we live in." My response to that is the left has just about as many bugaboos as he just described of the right. They're just different bugaboos.
Sure.
I still want to take a 2x4 and beat this man upside the head.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting thing. You were talking about the whole, like, you know, ignorance is bliss, and that was the first thing I thought about was some of the anti-gun people that I bump into, is they are not happy people.
No.
They're as a matter of fact, they're less happy than us, because while we're upset about how things are going and we're fighting real, real hard, and you know, that's not an enjoyable pastime. You know, I would much rather just be at, you know, complete peace and happiness, but unfortunately that's not where I am. But they're not at complete peace and happiness, but at least we get, you know, our get togethers and our gun shows and our NRA conventions and our gun blogger rendezvous and all that stuff. You know, they've got nothing. They've got their, you know, they've got their little banquets with, you know, 75 people all sitting around listening to speakers that are completely full of themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, and granted, the NRA show's got plenty of speakers completely full of themselves, but I don't set foot in that damn lecture hall. I'm hanging out with people. I'm just sitting in the press room, not doing any goddamn press. I've never written a goddamn thing in the press room. I eat cookies and talk to people.
I've actually blogged from the press room.
Yeah,
that's what I was there to do.
Yeah, but I'm mostly
there to shoot the shit with the other people that came.
Exactly. I mean, that's the whole thing. But it's not, you know, they're, you know, that's actually the whole reason why we've had so much victory with the Second Amendment, is because
we actually have grassroots.
We have grassroots, and we have something to offer. Is if you are supporting the anti-gun concern, you are talking about. People everywhere are wanting to kill people, and we need to stop these people. And it's nothing but blood in the streets for them.
Yep.
It's nothing but death and murder for them. For us, yes, we talk about death and murder. We absolutely do, and you know, the sad irony is that we're all fighting for the same thing, allegedly. I mean, I have to say that I don't believe a whit that the anti-gun people give a shit about public safety as much as they talk about it. But you know, while we talk about public safety, at the same time, you know, we've got people like the all the different bloggers that do collections and, you know, oh, let me show you my neat gun, or let me show you the neat accessory that I put on my gun, or I'm going to build one of these, let me show you one of these, or I'm going to the gun show, or I'm going to go to the NRA convention, or I'm going to the gun blogger rendezvous, or, hey, let's all get together at this restaurant, eat and just talk about shit, and all of that. At least we have some happiness thrown in there.
Yeah, we have fun.
Yeah, we have fun. Show me an instance where you've got a bunch of anti-gun people where they are not being dour. They might have joy in their lives when they're all by themselves, but as soon as they put their game face on, their game face is nothing but a sour face.
Yep.
And that's the reason why we win, because hey, if you own this gun, let's not think about shooting people. Let's not think about protecting your rights. Let's think about buying a cool gun that you like and going to the range and shooting it.
Well, we've all talked about it. You know, you take somebody shooting for the very first time. They go to the range. You hand them the gun. They're afraid of it. You do the instruction. You get them pointed down range. You know, they pull the trigger. They hit the target, and they get the smile.
Oh yeah, or
the smile is what frightens the gun control people more than anything else.
When I take new shooters to the range, I usually ask them, "What are you interested in? What's going to excite you?" So that I don't bring anything that they're not particularly interested in. I don't end up burning more ammo than I need to. But I'll say to them, it'll be a situation like they'll start shooting a .22 revolver, then they'll move up to a .357 Magnum with 38s in it. And then I'll go and pull out the .357 Magnums, and they're hearing .357 Magnum. That's a scary sounding thing. And, you know, I'll touch off the first round. It'll be a big concussion. It'll look like a whole lot more, and they'll look a little afraid. And I'll say to them, I'm not going to bring anything in this, you know, anything to this range today that you can't handle. You can handle anything that I put in your hands. And suddenly, just the light will go on, and they'll just suddenly get this idea of the, oh, I may be scared of this, but this person who knows what they're talking about and has done this to a bunch of other people knows what they're talking about, and I can handle this, and this is going to be fun. You know, and I remember actually being at a gun range with somebody I had met online, and he brought along his girlfriend and a friend of his girlfriend, and his girlfriend's friend was, I gotta say, like a 110-pound Asian girl. And this is where I got my love for the Mossberg 590, was he had a Mossberg 590, and the range that we're shooting at does not allow scattershot. It needs to only be slugs. And so he set this teeny tiny Asian girl up with a Mossberg 590 loaded with, you know, full-power slugs, and he taught her proper form and all of that, and she just ripped through the whole mag of those things and had nothing but a big smile on her face. And it's one of those, yeah, no, if you do it right, it's a whole lot of fun.
Yep. A long time ago, I did a post about the Aliens movies. Remember those?
That's my favorite sci-fi.
And this was one of them was about – they had one of the excerpts from the add-ons that they had was an interview with Ellen Ripley. What the hell's her name?
Sigourney Weaver.
Sigourney Weaver. And she's anti-gun as hell. And she said, you know, the Aliens film, she said, if I'd known it was going to be this military, I probably wouldn't have done it. But she said, you know, we went and did all this training and they let me shoot these weapons. And she said, and basically – she had a good time. She was almost ashamed of the fact that she went out and fired these automatic weapons and had a good time. And that was kind of interesting. And she said, then they handed her, you know, the blank M41 pulse rifle and the flamethrower. And she said, there were these people out there and I have a real flamethrower and they trusted me. It's amazing what trust does for you, doesn't it?
Well, that's an interesting thing that anti-gunners
have. They don't trust themselves, so they can't trust anybody else.
Except for the fact that, you know, I've said to them, I've said, okay, I'm going to give you a gun. Who would you kill? Well, I don't want to kill anybody. No, neither do I. Most people do not want to kill anybody. And I'm a gun blogger. I've got people who absolutely hate my guts, have attempted to attack me, have done all this awful shit towards me, and I still don't really feel that they need a bullet. I mean, who cares? They're a bunch of fucking losers. I don't care. There's not a, that's not it's not anything that would be, even if I could completely get away with it, it's not worth the trouble. Nope. You know, sort of situation. It's not worth, you know, me, you know, putting my pants on in the morning to go get, you know, righteous revenge. It's bullshit. You know, it's the people don't want to hurt other people. The only reason why I carry a gun is not because I want to hurt somebody. It's because I don't want to get hurt. I want to go home. I want my daughter to grow up with me. You know, it's the only reason behind it. You know, and there's a small hand, very, very small handful of people. And as we know from all these mass shootings, there's no way you're going to stop them before it happens. They're completely under the radar. You can say, oh, they had schizophrenia. Oh, they, you know, played violent video games. Oh, they did all of that. Guess what? There's a fucking million people that fit that exact profile and live their entire life and don't hurt a single person. Yep. It's just, it's never, ever, ever going to happen. There's always going to be monsters out there. And that's the only reason why I have guns.
Well, and Tam said, you know, I'm not going to go out underneath the desk waiting to get shot.
Mm-hmm.
Just not going that way. And that's a conscious choice.
Yep.
Hey, we got another caller. I'm surprised.
Yeah, we've run over. So.
I know, way over. Hello, area code 903.
Hello, Alan. How are you?
I'm fine.
I got a little problem with my volume here. Okay, I think it's going up. This is Will Brown up in Tyler.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Will.
I'm off work with sinusitis, so sorry about the voice.
That's fine.
Yeah, well, I'm getting better, I hope. Glad to hear from Kevin again. I remember in 03 when I was blogging on another guy's site as a guest blogger, I used to reference a lot of his earliest points, his earliest blog posts, as a way to illustrate some strategic point I was making. That I was the guy's blog was all about plasma strategy. But about the movie that was supposed to be a topic tonight.
It's fun. Oh, yeah, the one we never got to.
Yeah, that one. I was wondering, well, everybody's, but Kevin's particularly, his viewpoint. The thing I took most from the film was that the various people that were interviewed in the documentary were from various parts of the country, and everybody just seemed to have this fundamentally different assumption of what went into self-defense and having a gun and all of that. And there doesn't seem to be any effort to really make a unified or arrive at a unified understanding of what that is. And I was kind of hoping Kevin could kind of talk about that a little bit from his 11 years of experience of writing.
Wow.
I know it's kind of late at night for this, but
I think I need a little bit better or more thorough exposition of the question before I can answer it.
Wait a minute. You didn't do the homework?
Yeah.
You didn't do the homework? Oh, man.
The priestess.
All right.
I haven't seen the film, so I can't speak to that. Okay. I'm going to, but I haven't seen it yet.
The documentary.
You've got another week to see it, everybody.
A girl getting her gun and just the whole experience of why different women around the country have chosen to get a gun and carrying it and all of that and the experience of that. And it kind of covers from two different, basically from the, what was the anti-gun group that they, it was central on this one? I'm drawing a blank.
Brady Campaign? I think it was Brady Campaign.
Yeah, yeah. Brady Bunch, whatever they were.
Yeah.
And some, two or three of the women that were being covered in the documentary were approaching gun ownership from that perspective, but the rest, majority of the people being covered were women who had experienced something and chosen to have acquired a gun as a result. But there's a lady up in Massachusetts, for example, and that viewpoint of, you know, Massachusetts basically doesn't have a law regarding self-defense specifically. There was a lady from somewhere further south, I just remember which state now, and her viewpoint was fundamentally different as far as having a gun. There's a young lady up in Oklahoma. Her viewpoint was different. There's no fundamental United States American, this is what self-defense is, basic understanding, because every state's different.
Okay, I can answer that. I can now address the question because I understand your point. The reason that we're in the situation that we're in politically now is because there is no underlying philosophy behind America anymore. That is the end result of 100 years of public education. That's my personal opinion. I think I have statistics to back it up, but that's we don't teach philosophy. We do not teach philosophy. Everybody has a philosophy. The difference is whether you do it in an orderly. And this is something I got. I'm not a Randian. I do not. I'm not an objectivist. The title of my blog comes from a quote from Ayn Rand, but she had a lot to say about this, and I agree with her.
I read that.
We essentially everybody has a philosophy. The difference is whether you form it consciously, and do it with discipline, or it's just an accretion of different things that collect in your brain as you grow up. What we have is a country that's full of people with accretions that collect in their brain, and it's all of their all the things that you're exposed to as you grow up. Which is why these people do not have a common, coherent way of expressing what it is that they believe, because they can't express what it is that they believe. They don't have a philosophy that they can back up, that they can explain, that they can justify. One of the reasons I started blogging was to help me do that. One of the reasons, and I had this discussion with you, Alan, and the rest of the crew on one of the vicious circles I did with you a long time ago. The reason the American Revolution succeeded where almost every other revolution in history has failed is because the people who ran the revolution from 1776 to 1789 had a common philosophy based upon the philosophy of John Locke: life, liberty, property. They believed in that. They believed in the rights of individuals. They believed in all that stuff. That is why, when George Washington was made president, he served two terms and he walked away. He cared about what history was going
to be. Blog post covering this the past.
Yeah.
He did a good job on covering this too.
And that's why the French Revolution turned out like it did, because it followed the philosophy of Jean-Jacques Rousseau, which was liberty, égalité, and fraternity, which, liberty, equality, and brotherhood, and we're all going to be equal, and the only thing that gets you is equal misery. We don't have a philosophy anymore. America does not exist the way it did 100 years ago. We don't have any significant group of people who really do share any kind of a philosophy other than the left, which has probably the most consistent philosophy, which is, I know better than you drooling moron. But these people can't back it up because they've never been educated to be able to do that, and they haven't educated themselves.
Well, a lot of their stuff are things that sound good.
Yeah.
Well,
but they don't really work. Is the problem?
Well, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I got to take this away. You're mentioning about the woman in Massachusetts, and I'll have a lot to talk about that next week or whenever the hell we get to this damn documentary. But I mean, it's one of those like the. Barring any, any weird, complete oversight, injustice, George Zimmerman would have been acquitted of murder in all 50 states.
Yep.
There's oh,
And probably half of them he would never have been indicted.
Yes. Yeah. And probably, if the wind had been blowing a little bit different in Florida, he would have never been indicted there. But the idea is, he did not, you know, barring, you know, a place like, you know, New Jersey or, you know, certain places in Massachusetts where it would be a completely impossible for him to be carrying a firearm at the time, you know, at the time that he was attacked. It's, you know, stepping aside that and, you know, or even turning it around and saying that, you know, instead of, you know, him putting one single shot through Trayvon's heart, he, you know, he instead pulled out his pocket knife and stabbed him. It's 100% illegal in all 50 states, and it's 100% illegal in most countries of the world. And the big difference is that, you know, as far as what's going on is, again, it's people making stuff that sounds right. Is this was declared a murder before the facts were ever gone through, and then it was just a constant case of doubling down. It's not about ration and reason. And that's actually one of the reasons why I'm a blogger is, you know, I was a huge supporter of the assault weapons ban until I figured out how guns work. And then I realized, holy shit, they lied to me. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what, you know, what's gone on in, you know, in the whole idea of self-defense from, you know, from country to country and from state to state. If someone kicks down my door right now, I can legally shoot them in Massachusetts.
But there's no actual legislation that specifically states that.
We don't have stand your ground, but we have a castle doctrine here. So, and
which
on top
is
of that,
castle doctrine is for your home. Stand your ground is for outside your home.
And on top of that, while we don't have stand your ground, it doesn't fucking matter if someone's on top of my chest pounding my face into the pavement.
Right. And it's strictly self-defense.
So again, you can't retreat when somebody's on top of you. Your feet are no longer contacting the ground. You can't run away. We're not slugs, we're not snails. And so the bottom line is even with the minutiae of the law out there, it's, you know, there is absolutely no difference. But the issue is that people will say there's a difference. And when certain people say there's a difference, there's a large number of people who believe it.
But, you know,
given all of that, okay, go ahead, Kevin. You are good.
There's like 9 posts on the left sidebar of my blog under the heading "The Rights Discussion."
Yep,
and the newest one is, you know, 2006, 3 years after I started the blog, and all of that is basically a discussion of philosophy. And I've got people who disagree with, you know, my conclusions, but I am to a large extent a pragmatist. But it basically goes through and says, you know, what are our rights? Where do they come from? Why do we support them? And, you know, and that was me getting all that shit in a row. So, you know, I could have them all organized in my head. And then right below that is the right to arms essays, which explain why, you know, why I have a right to arms, why I have guns. And it comes out of, you know, where do rights come from? And, I think of all those, the Dangerous Victims trilogy that I wrote back in, when the hell was that? 2004 is the one that's gotten me the most email from people saying, you know, I understand this now. And, you know, most people don't think about it. They just think, you know, well, you know, I'm going to get a gun to protect myself because it's my right. Well, why is it your right? If you can't express that, if you don't have a philosophy that works, and when you talk about, when you talk to these women and they ask them, you know, why'd you get a gun, or, you know, what do you want to do? They can't express it because they don't have a philosophy that they can express.
Not only why, but they don't understand what they can do when.
Yeah, they won't actually go out and investigate the law. The one thing I do,
kind of the thing the movie made real plain to me was that there are just, I don't know if you want to call them reasonable, the movie made it look reasonable at least. There are people have underlying assumptions before they ever make the decision to buy the gun or not, and then they don't check their assumptions having gotten the gun.
Yeah,
just
the one thing,
whether or not they're right.
When I got my concealed carry permit for Arizona back when they first passed the law, we had a requirement for an 8-hour class, and the instructor in that class basically went through, this is when you can, this is when you can't. And but the big thing that he kept pushing was, if you have to use your gun, there's $50,000 wrapped around that bullet. But he did go through, you know, you can't go chase the guy down and shoot him if he's running away and that kind of stuff. And I think a lot of people kind of instinctively understand that. But you go read the defense of gun use posts over at Reddit.
Well, Jay used to do it.
Yeah, Jay used to do it. Reddit does a very good job. They've got a page of defensive gun uses, and they've got them all tagged with, you know, bad shoots and bad form, and there there's a hell of a lot less bad form and bad shoots than I would expect.
That kind of been a surprise. More people aren't all the way to doing it wrong, but
well, that's. That's not really
that many people doing it.
That's because people are basically decent humans. If they weren't, civilization wouldn't exist.
Good point, Alan. Good point.
You know.
Well, let's flip back on that, Alan. I don't think that's true. I think they're basically neutral in society. That the society they live in makes them decent or not.
Well, I mean, it depends on your definition of good. But I mean, it's one of those. I mean, Dave Grossman's work was a great example of it. Is just the fact that, you know, we don't want to kill each other, you know. Even in the instances where someone is given a rifle and said, "This person is the enemy, go out and kill him," and not only will you be absolved of all harm, you know, for killing somebody, but you'll be branded a hero. Even then, people are reluctant to engage in that. So, I mean, it's one of those. I mean. Good in the sense of altruism, nah, not so much.
No.
That's definitely more neutral. But I mean, when it comes to, you know, certain people shouldn't have guns. Not really. I mean, it's they're not gonna cause any major problems because we don't want to kill the other people of our species. And if you know if the anti-guns predictions were correct, we wouldn't be blogging. We wouldn't be talking on this podcast. We'd be reloading.
Yeah, well, you know, there's that internet meme going around of Spock saying logic dictates that if gun owners were as violent as anti-gunners paint us, there wouldn't be any anti-gunners.
Yep, that's true.
I gotta get sick more often. This is great.
Yep.
Thank you guys very much. I'm going to go ahead and sign off and carry on listening on the computer.
Thanks for calling.
Good luck, Kevin.
Thanks.
We really ought to start wrapping it up.
Yeah, it's been, what, almost 2 hours now?
Yeah, almost 2 hours. Longest,
you guys don't go 2 hours.
Longest score report ever, which is appropriate for the Kevin Bacon episode.
We're inviting a former Vicious Circle cast member in there. We go to the three-hour blog post.
It's an Uber podcast.
It is.
You're getting back to Vicious Circle links.
Oh, that's the blog title for the podcast, Uber podcast.
Uber podcast, yeah, it really is.
It'll help you on your morning commute.
There you go.
Yep. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Kevin. It was
well. Thank you for inviting me.
It was great. We ought to. Since you're not blogging anymore, maybe you can be on the show a little more often.
Well, if I remember to get into chat, yeah. Be here when you actually run this thing.
Yeah, you know, we'll
or send me another invite.
I'll make a point of being here. Yeah. And everyone that's still listening. I noticed it at about an hour and a half, people were just like dropping off like crazy. We even lost Brita. She was falling asleep.
She dropped off after an hour.
Yeah, she was falling asleep. So it's just the way things are.
Well, it's late. It's late there back east.
Yeah, it is. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for the people that called in. Hope you all enjoyed it. And we'll see you next week.
And we'll talk about that documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to watch that.
Yeah, at some point. All right, everybody. Have
Thanks.
A good one. Bye.
Bye.